Let's talk about border songs, Sam. This is the new Champ book, and can you tell us the process of how you were able to get this published, or how it came to be published?
Well, out of absolutely nowhere, I got a note from Paul Lobo Portugues, who I had met but didn't really know back in my Santa Barbara days 40 years ago. And he said he was starting a new press that was going to be devoted to chapbooks. And if I could possibly let him have a chapbook. Well, I've written very little in the last 8 or 9 years. Between my heart attacks and my wife's battles with cancer and her subsequent death, my output's been very small. So I began going through everything I had just to see what was there. And I found what, to me, felt like a kind of organic whole of a fat chapbook or a small book. It's a little larger than most chapbooks and a little small for a book. It's in limbo land, mm-hmm. which is a nice place to be. Mm-hmm. So that I could include some of my mourning poems, grief poems, but also some humor, some things that reflect on my political engagement, a variety of poetry, but still have a kind of coherent whole. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The border of the title isn't just the Mexican border. It's the border between life and death, which is where I was living for several years. It's the various borders I've been crossing since I left Copper Canyon and began speaking basically all over the world about poetry and political engagement. And songs, because, you know, they're songs.
Yeah. In fact, in one of those songs, there's a poem called Another Love Song. You say, every border is a bridge or door or window. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, if being a good Confucian poet, I want exactitude in my language, I look at where my language comes from. And I find Greek and Latin and Germanic. I find English. I find French and Spanish and Mexican Spanish and Japanese words and Vietnamese words. And it's a big stew, just like our culture is a big stew. But within that culture, there is still the possibility of defining a kind of language as experience, not just as abstract semantics. And of course, that's the first thing the poet wants, is to reveal the experience, mm-hmm. not to, you know, write pretty words.
Mm-hmm. Could you read another love song?
This was written in Buenos Aires, where Gray and I spent 7 northern winters. Down there it was summer. Another love song. A full moon emerges, pale, almost transparent above the Rio de la Plata, rising slowly toward the Southern Cross. Like millions of porteños, my wife and I take refuge in a sidewalk cafe, eating slowly, sipping wine, talking late, waiting for the heat to subside before we can mosey off to bed, a little high, tired, to dream whatever dreams we might. Gray is bald, still a little weak from months of chemotherapy, and wearing a white knit hat because her wig is hot. We move slowly along the still thronged streets of the Palermo neighborhood at 2 a.m., greeted by a blizzard of falling tiny yellow acacia flowers with each small breeze. It is almost solstice. In El Norte, winter storms howl in the trees. Friends have drained the pipes in our port towns and house and prepared it for a lengthy freeze. Here, My wife and I return to find relief, to heal a little from the assaults of age that in the end no one can escape. So this is the autumn of my life, this exile or retreat into the heart of Buenos Aires summertime. I think of others, Galeano, Gelman, Borges, Cortázar, Che, so many who knew these lovely streets as home or exile in a mean time that now seems so very long ago, despite the daily news of the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo, who still meet to demand that we remember the victims of the dirty war and its criminals who are still on trial. But here I find no winter in the blood, no ice storm in the heart. I look into the eyes of one I have loved so long and find myself at peace. Esteban, my brother, kisses both our cheeks, and I kiss his, grateful for whatever days remain in a heart grown weak with age and heartbreak over all that those I loved betrayed. The American capitalist enterprise is on its knees. Nothing can rinse the blood from hands that clung so tenaciously to greed. Nothing can resurrect the American dream. In the country of the heart, every border is a bridge, a door that opens wide, a window on the world from which we see ourselves as one, one in gratitude, one in solidarity. Soon it will be dawn. The moon is slowly going down. My wife sleeps peacefully, and every now and then a sigh escapes her lips. She is so beautiful, it makes me weep.
So much I could ask you about that particular poem, but the notion of actually putting war criminals on trial, you know, great idea, isn't it?
Remarkable, yeah. We did that at Nuremberg, but it left interest thereafter.
Yeah. Anyone who sees your Facebook postings kind of knows that where you stand on politics.
Well, you know, the president of Uruguay spent 10 years tortured in prisons during the Dirty War for being a communist. He's now president. He drives a 15-year-old car and turned the presidential palace into a hospice.
Mm-hmm. Watch out who you waterboard? Is that what you're saying? but what about, you know, the recent U.S. elections happened and Obama won a victory, and the coalition seems to have been that of a new liberal majority, you might say. The only voters' bloc in which Mitt Romney won a sound victory over President Obama was in white Christian men over 45.
The fat cracker vote.
You said that. I didn't. Were you buoyed by the
result? Well, you know, it's the grand au fait party.
The fact that Obama won and all the other victories that there were, the first openly gay U.S. senator.
Well, the nice thing is that a lot of these guys who were invading women's bodies got sent packing. The bad part of this election is we're still at war. We still have indefinite detention. We still have death by presidential fiat. Still no discussion of the poor. Do you notice that in that entire election, no one ever really talked about the poor? The poor are now invisible again.
Right.
Nobody mentioned, 3.5 million homeless.
Nor did global warming get a lot of press until Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, Sandy speeded that up a tad,
right,
yeah.
Right. Is World War III the planet?
That Chris Christie's attention.
And he might have gotten religion based on how he was referring to the president. But do you think World War III is the planet against the species?
Well, frankly, World War III scares the hell out of me. India and Pakistan have nuclear arms, and Israel continues this assault on Gaza, on the Palestinian people, with our money. We're dropping bombs in Yemen. We're dropping bombs all over the damn place. We're flying drones above the cities of our own people. It's really frightening. And all it's going to take is one nutcase to trigger a World War III. Yeah. But yes, global warming is the second greatest threat.
You say that Israel's doing this with our money, but it's the money that we're borrowing from China, to, basically, to do this.
Well, you know, I don't buy that whole theory of economics, frankly. Our economic problems are the result of capitalism, not the result of borrowing money from China. Every Walmart in the United States gets well over $100,000 a year in social assistance, food stamps, for its employees. That's the way the capitalist system works. So this is bullshit about borrowing money from China. It's how we're spending our own money. 50% of our tax base goes to feed the military machine.